Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Advisor with Stacey Chalemi. Today, I'm very excited because we have a very special guest. Before we begin, I'd like to give a quick shout out to Spreaker and iHeartRadio for sponsoring us today. Thank you so much for making everything happen. And I'm really excited today because we have a very special guest. It's Corey Peck, and he's just an amazing person. And he's also a speaker, and he has a ton of business knowledge. And he's going to share some of that with us today. He's going to talk about how to leverage your business and how to make things run smoother and how you could leverage your time. So it's such an honor to have you here, Corey. You have a lot of business experience when it comes in a lot of different areas. Could you tell everybody a little about yourself and what you do?
Thanks, Stacey. I'm super happy to be here. It's exciting to talk to you today. I've been a founder of multiple businesses in the past. Most recently, had a marketing and advertising agency. And my most recent venture, Fractional Ops, we help CEOs increase their profit in 90 days with fractional experts and proven systems. And these systems are what I've collected over my career as a founder. I've also been a global chief operating officer for companies doing nine figures in revenue. And I've seen that founders and CEOs run into the same problem. Sometimes they might just have a few more zeros behind it, but there's essentially seven areas that they tend to either struggle with or get tremendous success when they're able to systemize that at scale.
And what are some of the problems that you see are very common with a lot of businesses that they run into when they're trying to leverage their business?
Yeah, absolutely. So we call them the seven ops accelerators. And these are the seven areas of your business that once you increase that operational maturity, you can really get an outsized return and increase your founder or CEO leverage. So this allows you to spend most of your time on your high payoff activities and less time in the business or problem solving. So we always talk about going from firefighting to fire prevention. And when you systemize these seven areas, that really gives you that ability. So the seven areas that we always hear from CEOs and founders the most of where their challenges are in the customer and value, which is could be your really understanding who you sell to and what value you provide. A lot of people actually think they know that, but when they find out that they don't have a system to actually validate that, that could be where they struggle, especially in 2025, where the world's changing so much. The next is in strategy and planning. A lot of requests we get are for their go-to-market strategy. Maybe what was working in the past is no longer working, and they have to reimagine that and putting in the systems in place to connect their different parts of their business and also conversations with their customers or clients and really tie that into their strategy. Products and service, just an extension of that. Like, what are you offering people to buy? And does that have to be changed in 2025? People and culture is a big one. That's one of the top three we hear about all the time. And what's interesting in 2025 is we're hearing a lot about hybrid teams. So these are hybrid AI agents and human teams and reimagining all of their workflows to meet the pricing pressures that a lot of companies are facing, but also the speed of output. And so that's something that we also help teams systemize. The marketing and sales, this is the other one that's the top one. It's completely changed in 2025. People that maybe did cold outbound campaigns find that they're no longer working. People that used to rely on inbound or RFPs, they found that all of that has dried up in the wake of people, being uncertain about what's happening in this world. And so really reimagining your RevOps and your go-to-market engineering and using AI and workflow automation to increase that to get where you need. Finally, operations and delivery. This is, they may have to, the way they did work before may have to change in 2025. So looking at that. And finally, finance and insights. This is the other one that's in the top three. A lot of founders and CEOs of small, fast-growing companies. These are companies that are called like under 20 million in revenue. They find that they have a lot of lagging information. And so by the time they get the reports, it might be stale dated by weeks or even months. And a lot of the requests we get is to build real-time dashboards and integrate the different functions of their business, all the way from marketing and pipeline building through delivery to the final reporting, to come up with proactive cash flow forecasting, real-time finance dashboards and tools so that they at any given time know where their business is at and can make informed decisions, especially in a time right now where you need to be acting quick to, stay afloat.
Yes, 100%. And when it comes to customers and value, what are some of the common mistakes that businesses seem to make when it comes to understanding what their customer is and how to provide good value to their customers?
Yeah, absolutely. So, one of the tools we run customers through when we're trying to really dial in that customer value is a tool called a Kano analysis. And if you're not familiar with a Kano analysis, it essentially has it's like a 2x2 grid, and you have satisfaction high to low going up, and then you have the functionality or how well you have implemented that going from left to right. And when you do this analysis, what's interesting is you realize that there are some things that are called, must-haves or must-be. So these are, if you're in a certain type of industry, you just have to have this. An example I always give is if you're in hotels, having toilet paper in the bathroom is just like that must be there, obviously. And so you're gonna have parts of your business that just have those elements. And so you first map those out. Then the next one is what you call the performance line. And so this is usually going from the bottom left to the top right. And it's talking about all of those items that you actually compete on in the market. So not the obvious must-haves, but what are the types of either services, or if you're in a product, it could be the features that you're actually competing on, and really doing a deep dive into getting customer and client feedback. Or if you're a software company, you might have like G2 reviews, something similar, where you're understanding where are you winning and where are your areas of opportunity on there. The next one that goes across is what we call like indifferent. So there's probably things that as a business you're doing that are taking up time and resources, but the clients are indifferent about, or even worse, sometimes it actually detracts from their satisfaction. And so you want to map those out too and really dig deep. Make sure that you're not offering something that you might think is cool internally, but clients could take it or leave it. And so those are areas that you might want to start cutting first to start either raising your margins or being able to adjust your pricing to client pricing pressures. And then finally, it's those attractors, the delighters. What are the things that you do as a business that give an outsized positive customer satisfaction return, but that are easy for you to do? And I always tell the story. If you travel different hotels, I've been fortunate to go to all sorts of different hotels in my career. And I remember the first time I stayed at the Four Seasons, I was, they come and tidy up the room as they usually do. But when I went to the bathroom, I had just taken, my toothpaste, toothbrush, and I just had it on the counter. And I remember when I came back, they had put that in and they'd ordered it like by height from left to right and on this towel. And it was something I had never experienced before until I had been to that hotel. And it's probably something that doesn't take any more or less time on their team's end, but had an outsized client satisfaction return on my end. So you want to make sure that I also know what those are, because those are the areas that can actually help you win when everything else is the same and when pricing pressures exist. Those delighters are what will make you stand apart as a business.
I like that a lot. Now, when it comes to strategy and planning, is there a specific way companies should strategize their business and in a way that they should plan what they're going to do ahead so they actually succeed? Because a lot of times, people don't really don't strategize really well. They don't create strategies, or they get things happen. It throws them off course, and they don't reconstruct the strategy. Is there something that you can help with the listeners that are trying to work on create good strategies and good planning so they could have a stronger, more profitable business?
Yeah, so I think there's two right away. One opportunity that I find some businesses are not doing is that they're not pulsing in the right frequency with their strategy. They may meet possibly once a year and just have a high level talk, or maybe they do a SWOT analysis or something, and then they go in. So I find that companies that are running some sort of framework, whether it's like EOS or scaling up or one of those, where you're pulsing every quarter just to validate that you're still on track. A lot of companies we work with follow the OKR framework, which is opportunities and key results, and they're meeting every quarter and sometimes even monthly just to validate that the objectives they set and the key results that they set at the beginning of the year are still relevant today. And if they're not, they will change them or get rid of the ones that are no longer relevant. So I think that's a challenge that some people will face, is it's like a self-imposed challenge. They'll set a goal, and then even though it should be changed, there's sort of, I don't know if it's an ego or just a viewpoint that it shouldn't be changed, so they keep following the wrong path. So I think number one is pulse on it frequently, as early as monthly, but certainly you should be doing that quarterly. And the second is when you do a go-to-market strategy, part of it is you have to really, really understand what it is that you are solving for. Whether you have a product or you have a service, you're solving for something. Customers are usually buying for three reasons, right? It's either going to be to save money, or you're going to make them money, or it's for some sort of status. And those are usually the three reasons that people will buy. And so for most of us, unless you're a brand that has a very strong brand equity and that people will engage with your brand or buy your product for a status symbol, it's usually going to be one of the other two. And so when you're going through that analysis, you need to make sure that you're really digging deep on, like, what is that ultimate outcome that your client or customer is trying to get. It could be a business outcome, could be some sort of lifestyle improvement, but really getting clear on that. There's a great marketer, Alex Ramosi, that has a good framework on this, where he talks about dream outcome and the problems that are getting in the way, and then what your solutions are to helping them achieve those problems, right? And so even just that, a simple framework like that, will just help you really narrow down what you're doing and what you're solving. And from there, that's where you can then turn that into tactics, turn that into products and services. But I find that in 2025, there are some clients that we work with and people that are coming to us to work with us that haven't done that work in sometimes decades. And they find that all of a sudden what used to work no longer is going to be something that's as attractive in 2025.
Right. No, I agree 100%. Now, when it comes to products and services, a lot of times people have products and services out. They may push some, they may not push some, or sometimes they don't meet up to the standards. Now, is there anything that you tell people to do if they really want to get, specific products out and they want people to, really, grasp them and really want to purchase them? Is there different ways and different strategies in the marketing world and the sales world that work effectively to help them build sales?
Yeah, what I find with smaller companies, so again, like sort of like under 20 million in revenue, is that they are spreading themselves too thin. They have a limited team, they have a limited bandwidth or a limited production line if it's a physical product, and they're trying to do too many things. And so when you do an analysis, it's Pareto principle. Usually you find 80% of the sales is coming from 20% of the products or services. There's a great book called The Pumpkin Plan, if anyone's ever read it, which is it was based on those prize-winning pumpkins you see at the state fairs, where the way they get them so large is they constantly are going through and they take the biggest one, then they cut the vines off all the smaller ones, and then they have a few bigger ones, and whatever one starts growing bigger, they'll cut the vines off the other one. And in the end, you have that whole vine network, which is like an analogy for your company, all going into that one pumpkin. And that goes bigger, 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 which could be a product line, could be your business. And the CEOs and founders that are able to create that prioritization and that hyper focus with their team are the ones that can usually bring that product to market faster, or make sure that the product is constantly being improved and optimized so that they can start competing on perhaps a product-led growth strategy instead of a, advertising-based strategy.
Right. And I see that all the time. I see sometimes, where small or medium-sized businesses, they have only so much bandwidth and they spread themselves out so much and they just try to jump into so many different things that they're not given the one product that probably it does the best enough of attention. And then the whole thing starts to crumble because they're not really focusing on one specific thing and letting that grow and then, taking it from there. They try to do like 10 different things at once when they should be really focusing on the one most important product or services that are probably bringing the most income in for them. But I wanted to ask you, when it comes to AI and it comes to incorporating AI with humans, today's society, AI has placed a huge impact. What would you say, incorporating AI into businesses, or is there a successful way of doing it, and have you seen a lot of positive outcome from it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the ones that are able to take what's already working and then apply both workflow automation, which isn't AI. I think a lot of people confuse that sometimes. If you're trying to automate, like triggers and actions, like when this happens, do this. I think a lot of people mistaken that for AI. That's just workflow automation. But when people take workflow automation and then power AI tools into it so that you can still have those triggers and actions, but some of the actions can be tasking, whether it's an AI agent or something more like a ChatGPT, where you tell it to do something and you give it an input, it gives you an output back. Those are the ones that are able to get those really good returns because they're taking something that already worked with humans and now they're amplifying it. AI, like many things in automation, is that if what you're doing manually does not work, All you're going to do is scale a problem. You're just going to be failing faster and bigger and more broadly. So, number one, I always say know what works with your human team before you start applying workflow automation and AI to it. There's a great quote from Jensen, who's the CEO of NVIDIA, that says, AI is not coming to take your job, but another person who knows how to use AI is going to take your job. Similarly, AI is not coming from your for your company is not going to take down your company, but another company that is using AI absolutely will. I'm paraphrasing it there, but that's sort of the gist of it. And that's what everyone has to think of in 2025. If you're a CEO or a founder of a growing small or mid-sized business, you have to be thinking about, hey, how AI can take what you're already doing well and really scale it out. Not even just to get an opportunity to scale faster, but just to be even like competitive at all. Like everyone's starting to do. The number one area that we are asked about is with revenue operations or RevOps. There's a role that's very popular. We have many on our team. It's a role that didn't even exist about a year or so ago, which is called a go-to-market engineer. And what the go-to-market engineers on our team are doing is they're working with the CEOs and founders that have very specific business challenges or business opportunities, and you need to use a combination of softwares and AI platforms and AI tools to solve that problem. Give you a quick example. We were doing a project with a corporate real estate professional services business about a month ago. And one of their opportunities they had was they had access to all of these listings of closed leases. So they have just, property records, this lease closed, and here was the term. The challenge is that don't actually list tenants. So it just says who owned it, the lease was closed. And so it's sort of useless information for most of what they would do, which is provide professional services to either clients who have properties that are trying to get tenanted, like in property management, or working with large tenants to try to negotiate their deals or get them into a better lease situation. And so what we're able to do is just take that raw data and then use AI tools to go crawl the internet, find every record where someone had listed that address as their business. And it could have been from LinkedIn job posts, could have been on websites, it could have been from registries, databases, wherever. It finds them. We have it also do a confidence score where it has to find three or four data points. Otherwise, we have to tell it to not say it has a high confidence. And then of the ones that are high confidence, then it goes around and says, who are all the decision makers that would be involved in this, whether it's a CFO or a CEO of the businesses of a certain revenue. So it's finding who they are, finding where they may have the office, finding the people, finding the revenue. Then it's also going in to say, okay, well, we're representing this type of building. So maybe it's like a warehouse. So we're saying go through and now research and only pull me people who are in third-party logistics or warehousing or whatever. And build that list and then find all their contact information and then do and it's doing all this stuff. And it's also running plays where like I would go find them on LinkedIn and say, hey, find if they had posted in the last 3 weeks. And then I want you to read that post, summarize the post, and say, hey, I really loved your post last week about whatever. And that would be the prefix to their opening personalized email that would go out. And so anyways, but all this in milliseconds at scale to tens of thousands of records, qualifying people in and out. And then what the output on the recipient's end is that they're getting something that's very personalized to them. We also normalize it. So it's not saying, hello, Mark Johnson, CPA.eng. Like, because that's what we've all gotten emails where they're just pulling data records. So you have to normalize it. You have to go to their website, see how do they talk about themselves, normalize their company name. So this is all work that, like a business development rep or someone on the team would have to be doing manually for these deals. And so all happens right away. Then it gets pushed into the CRM automatically or sent out through an email sequencer. And then the positive replies get automatically a deals created. And then someone can go call them, or that can go into a further call or email-based workflow. And that's the opportunity. You can even further, I've even done some where we further take those and we turn them into scripts for AI video tools, like Ascend Spark, where it's now putting that into a tool where the person that's recorded the video, it's changing their mouth and it's changing what they say to import, the name, company name, stuff like that. So that's just one example of sort of, these are like the flashy things that people see. But if you think about the prospecting, the list building, the researching, the qualifying in or out, the personalizing the message, the finding a personalized point to include in your email, all of that is what's happening now, is the point. And some are doing it better than others, but everyone is starting to do it. So if you're not able to play at that scale and your competitors are, that's going to be your big danger area in 2025.
Makes sense. What are the key elements for your 90-day ROI promise, and how do you ensure that clients will achieve a 2x ROI on their investment when it comes to your program?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's something that we started putting in because I know with a lot of operational changes in general, people have had mixed experiences. Maybe they've worked with a fractional executive that didn't quite have all the broad skill set they needed. Maybe they worked with a consultancy that gave them a big report and a lot of advice, but no follow through. They might have hired people and it didn't work. And so something that we put in early on was what we call our 90-day ROI promise, where we promised to get 2x a return on investment for all of our services, or we refund all the onboarding costs associated with that first phase. And the way we do that is by creating a very specific action plan before we even start. And we have something called the Operational Maturity Assessment, and I can give you the link as well, so your viewers can check it out. And it's a self-assessment that lets you understand of those seven ops accelerators. It has 50 questions that spread across all seven of them, and it's showing you where those areas of opportunity are. And so your level of operational maturity, we call it framework, flow, and fusion. You might have not started yet, which is the lowest, but framework is you might have rules, behavioral norms, ways of working internally. Maybe there's like a sheet or two that exists. And so you have something, but it's not yet a process. The flow is when you move into a process and you start systemizing it. So a process is simply a set of tasks done in sequence to get you to a desired result. And that could be a manual process of, my output is your, or my input, your output, it's your input, and you go through. And then you can sometimes people have specialized software tools like for one part of that or another. So they might have an accounting tool, they might have a task management tool. Then we finally get into fusion. And so fusion is when you start combining all of those cross-functional processes into one overall interconnected process. You may even now be on some sort of ERP system. This is definitely where workflow automation, AI tools get in on that stage. And what we do is we do that assessment with businesses, and then they can very quickly see based on their goals, because all relative to what their goals are. So whether they are on any of those, EOS scaling up, OKRs, whatever, they all have some sort of goal. So based on the goals, where are you scoring on your operational maturity on the different areas of the business? And then that'll tell us which of those areas we should prioritize to advance that operational maturity. So again, your goals are to grow or it's to build your pipeline, then probably we're going to focus on that sales and marketing side, and it might be the RevOps questions that maybe you didn't answer as well. And when we do that, what we find is that we hyper-focus the business's goals to our operational change management. We're able to take very tactical areas of the business and very quickly systemize them or advance that level of systemization in the business. And we have things that we measure. So any of these areas will all have different, both key leading indicators and key performance indicators. And that's what we're measuring the ROI on. And so we, knock on wood, we haven't missed it yet, but it's one of those things that we know when we go in with a very, very specific plan and we have an assessment tool and we're all on the same page and we're all signing off on both sides on what that plan is, we get fantastic results, and people are very happy with that. So I think this is something that internal teams should be doing anyways. I think a lot of times they put, these lofty goals with no broken out plan out of detail. And there's certainly not a measured plan. Like you don't know what you're tracking on every single part of those action steps. And when you see it every day and it's in your face and you see what ones are green, what ones are red, it really helps focus everyone.
I love that. Now, when it comes to your operations officers, like the COOs, and ops specialists, does it differ from traditional full-time executive hires, and what are the advantages to that they offer to small businesses?
Yeah, so when I had one of my last businesses, we actually had a lot of fractional roles. I had a fractional CFO, I had a fractional HR expert, and I had a fractional chief technology officer as well. And the individuals were very, very talented at what they did. Where I found the gap was that they were just one person. And so if there was something slightly outside of their lived experience, we were kind of stuck. And then usually that meant I would have to go find someone else, or I would have to try to figure that out on my
Right.
own. It became a frustrating experience. And what I also found was that agencies, or large consultancies, they have a really deep bench of talent. They have a lot of people that are a lot of experts that they can access. However, it was very advisory. So
Yeah.
you would get the answer you need, but you wouldn't quite get how to do it and what the steps were, or and they certainly couldn't do it for you. And
Right.
so taking those two experiences, my thought and sort of the genesis for fractional ops was like, how do you take the best part of the advisory and consultancies and the best part of the fractional working relationship and put those together? And when we do that at Fractional Ops, what we find is that we can have like a fractional chief operating officer working with teams. But then if the CEO says, hey, I need to, I part of our plan is I want to put in a CRM, or I want to build a go-to-market strategy, or I need a new website, or whatever. I need financial dashboards, whatever it is. Typically, that would be the end of the conversation. It's like, I don't do that, sorry. What they're able to do, because we're almost a, it's almost like an agency-like team, is they just take that back on our internal channel, say, hey, this client is looking for, a CRM implementation. And then our internal project managers say, got it. They start resourcing the ops specialist. So that's the specialist you talked about. And they then get that done. And so that way the chief operating officer can still manage that overall implementation, but they now have a team of all these specialized disciplines on, HR, finance, revenue, and other areas as well. And so that's something that we found is working very well. And it came just from my own experience and frustration, having these different roles that were all experts, but couldn't flex or couldn't go deeper if they needed to.
Right. Now, can you share a success story or a case study of a small business that experienced significant transformation or improvement in the operations after engaging with fractional ops?
Yeah, for sure. Well, there's many. I think the biggest one that happened a few months back comes to mind, where this was a company in a very traditional industry, and they'd been around for like over a decade, right? And they had been growing every year, and then all of a sudden, in the last few years, like many businesses, that growth stopped. It started plateauing. They had that traditional experience where the revenue's growing a bit, but the profit's actually going down. And
Right.
we did is we came in, and what we found, there's a few areas we found. So very quickly, and this is part of that, operational maturity assessment and that onboarding, we found that the way that they were delivering was no longer acceptable for 2025. So that was one thing. We found that the tools being used in some areas were outdated and weren't taking advantage of a lot of the improvements that had been made in both workflow automation and AI. And then we also found that the team structure itself was not reimagined for what 2025 could allow it to be, with the combination of some of these tools and moving the experts on their team to more high payoff activities.
Right.
When we look at all those elements and you go through and you implement new tools, you change the structure of your team, you add different roles, you eliminate or redistribute some of the other roles, what we were able to do is really pull in a lot of those efficiencies. And the one thing that was a big difference was on the finance end, they basically were flying blind. So they didn't have any real-time information, like no weekly scorecard or dashboard. So that was one of the first things we also put in. And this was how crazy the transformation was. We found out, and it was unbeknownst to everyone, but they found out that they had less than 7 days of cash left.
Oh,
And
wow.
they historically had been in the red, like hundreds of thousands of dollars in the red. And so, but no one really knew why, because we didn't have that information. So by also changing and putting in these new financial systems and tying them to the projects, and also further tying them to the pipeline, you
Yeah.
now get more accurate forecasts. And so, that's obviously a panic button situation. So we, but now where you're starting from. So we were able to come up with a plan. It didn't happen overnight, but after 6 months, the net, not gross, the net profit increase was able to change over $1 million in the
Wow.
positive. It took them to 198 days of cash runway from seven in just a 6 month period. And that's obviously, there's a lot of work from the founders and their team. So they had to do a heavy lift. But part of it is just knowing that information and then having a operational plan to slowly change these different areas, because there's never one thing. There's different levers you have to pull across the business. And so that's a very good success story, and something we're very proud of, they're very proud of. And it shows the power of the hyper focus, setting clear goals, and then also leaning into automation and workflow design and just general business operations to help you succeed.
I love that. Now, what sets your approach apart from other fractional and freelance help? And how does your ops transformation systems ensure successful operations and transformation?
Yeah, the one com so I'll tell you what I hear a lot. The one comment I hear, and it's actually in our interviews, because we get like hundreds or thousands of people like on a weekly, monthly basis, like constantly applying to work here, which is very humbling. But we get the same comments of those that make it to the interview. What they always say is that in their experience, there's a lot of what they call marketplaces out there. And so these are, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's just different, right? Like what these marketplaces are is someone's built a online community where if you're a expert, you can sign up to offer your services. And if you're a business or a brand, you can sign up to find experts, right? And so they're sort of doing like a matchmaking, right? Comment we get though is that it's about how rigorous our hiring process is. We have a page on our website called it says unreasonable vetting is what I call it. So we typically are going through a more stringent onboarding and qualification process with our fractional resources than our clients are doing with their full-time employees, even some of their executive hires. And we do that very intentionally because we want to make sure that the people on our team are the best of the best, not only from their experience, but also from working with small and mid-sized businesses. So a lot of the times that we're screening people in or out, we get sometimes people, they're not too pleased that they've been screened out. And when you look at them on paper, it's like these are heavy hitters, and like you would be crazy not to have them on the team. But a lot of the questions we're asking in our skills assessments that we make them go through are really about the mindset of working with entrepreneurs and fast-growing companies. There is a massive difference between being successful in a company that already had a lot of established systems than starting from scratch. And we call it like the blank slate problem. The people who are entrepreneurs and the people that do well at fast-growing companies are those who can understand what the goal is and be able to just like see how that could play out in their mind and start building things from nothing. It's not the skill that most people have, and there's a big difference between building and managing. And so a lot of times, there's people that are very good. You see this with entrepreneurs too, right? There's people that are really good at building companies, and then they exit it to someone else, and then they go build the next one because their special sauce is starting from nothing, taking an idea into something. Then there's others that are experts at managing something that's built, and they're way better than those entrepreneurs at just keeping everything going and optimizing. And so what we're trying to find is the former, because all of our clients are, they're either fast growth or they've plateaued and they need to go through. And so they need people that can create and can build. And so that's the comment we hear a lot, is that our process of finding the right types of people, and the people that do also have the best experience, and the people that have the tools experience. Because in 2025, you also have to understand how to use AI, workflow automation, the newest and greatest software tools that are for small and mid-sized businesses. And that's the thing we find. We get that comment a lot where they're like, oh man, the amount of tests you're running me through just to even get to the second interview. And we're saying, yeah, because we know that we're going to drop you into a business with some founders. And if you're not familiar with this, so you're just going to crash and burn, right? And I've had that experience myself. I've had fantastic fractionals that worked with me in my past businesses. And also not so much. I've had people that, really struggled with technology, or they weren't a systems thinker. They were more of a manager of something that's built. And so that's really what we're trying to find. I don't know if that's fully unique to us, but certainly something that from the hundreds and hundreds of applicants that we get, they all comment on, is the one common theme.
I love it. Now, if we had to take today's conversation, you wanted to emphasize on some important factors. What are some things that you'd like to emphasize to the listeners today?
When you're going into 2025 as a CEO or a founder of a smaller mid-sized business, there is a lot of shiny things that are out there when it comes to AI and workflow automation. And I have seen some companies get tripped up where they don't understand what's involved, not only from a time and a bandwidth and a learning curve internally, but also financially. It is an investment. The return and the ROI typically doesn't come right away, because you do have to do testing and learning, especially if you're a business that hasn't done a lot of outbound marketing, for example, or a lot of campaigns, and you don't really know what works and doesn't work, or you've never taken the time to reverse engineer, whether it's founder-led sales or you have a top sales team, like what actually are they doing step by step that is repeatable? Because that's the challenge, right? If you're going to put workflow automation or AI, you have to be able to break it down so it can be repeated. So we built, I actually worked with one of our fractional CFOs, and we built a all-bound marketing ROI calculator. So it actually will calculate based on some assumptions that we know to be true from campaigns that are relevant to small, mid-sized business. It will calculate what your ROI is cumulatively, but also on a month-by-month basis. And we check to see when do you actually get an ROI at all, and then when do you get your target ROI? So most companies have somewhere between a 3 and 5 times return on their investment as their target for anything that they. So it'll calculate that. And my favorite part is that it also does a cash flow analysis too. So month over month, it's going to show you how you're cash flowing month over month, and also how you're cash flowing on a cumulative basis. And that allows you to see, depending on what you sell, depending on your close rate, depending on how many people you're going to target, depending on your average contract value, your sales cycle, it has all of these elements that you just fill in. And you may find that you're ROI positive within a couple months, which I've seen sometimes. You might also find that it dips for a while before it starts back up based on the numbers. And either way, there's no right or wrong, but we feel this is a really great tool if you've never actually taken the time to consider whether this is for you, especially when it comes to those like all bound marketing campaigns where you're taking like intent signals from LinkedIn and you're doing something about it with some other tool, and there's like all the software. So it has all the software costs, it has all the costs to keep it running, and it will show you that. So that's something I'm happy to make available to your listeners. I think it's a very valuable tool, because sometimes people shouldn't do it. I think that's the thing. Like you might find that you can't even get an ROI based on the way your business is set up, and that alone might be helpful because you may look at that and say, oh, maybe there's something we have to change about what we're offering, how we're selling it, how much we're selling it for, our process. So yeah, I think that's the that that'll be something that's helpful for everyone, I believe.
Oh, I definitely think so. I've heard a lot of people, they have created a business and they're not really getting the return investment, and they're not understanding why, and they're looking at all these different things and they can't figure out why. And a tool like that could actually help a person see things more clearly and actually see what the causes may be, and give them some insight in how they can actually fix those issues.
I hope
So,
so.
it sounds like it. So, what are some of the services that you provide?
Yeah, so at Fractional Ops, there's two core ways we're engaged. One is with fractional executives and operations experts. So that's typically a fractional chief operating officer. And then the experts are going to be typically in finance, HR, revenue. Those are the main ones that we're asked for. So that could be everything from financial controllers to HR operations experts or managers to stand up. Could be your applicant tracking system, your HRIS system, or could be even just performance management, upward mobility, career matrixes, how you do raises in an equitable and standardized way, like all these just day-to-day HR operations. We have people that do that as well. And so that's one way. The second way is what I will call special projects. So this could be that you need a CRM implemented. So we're a HubSpot solution partner. So sometimes people just need that stood up because they don't have one. Could also be these go-to-market AI plays. So using softwares like Clay and email sequencers and hooking those into your CRM. And so that's everything that building lists and doing research around the internet and finding the right prospects, personalizing messages, hooking that into your CRM. Sometimes traditional agents, sometimes more traditional industries actually even use us just for the research. They have a massive sales team and their teams do this research manually. So sometimes the benefit for them is we just do a bunch of work using AI, then we just give them like a CSV file every single week or every single month or whatever that cadence is, just to eliminate the hundreds of thousands of dollars of cost that these highly skilled but also high investment roles are doing, and just make that so that they're focused on just closing deals or building client relationships. So yeah, fractional resources, or special projects, those are the ways that we get engaged with the most.
I love it. And how can people contact you?
Yeah, if you want to reach out, you can go to fractionalops.com. There's a contact form on there, and just reach out that way, and we will see how we can work together.
I love it. I love it. Well, this has been amazing, Corey. I thank you so much for coming on the show today. You blessed us with a whole bunch of really great information today, that a lot of knowledge and wisdom when it comes to business and how to grow your business and really analyze what is going wrong sometimes. Because sometimes little things can make such a big difference if we find them in there before it gets to be a big problem. And if we change a few things, sometimes it just the smallest tweaks can make things just skyrocket. And just having the right people and just having, and being able to, work together as a team and understand, what's really needed and if the services and the products we have are really what our consumers want. And I'm just, there's so many different segments of a business, but if you can analyze each part and understand, which ones are good, which ones need tweaking, which ones you have to redo and maybe rethink about, it could really, reconstruct the business and really bring a high level of success. When you're talking about those extra zeros at the end, it definitely, if you're looking at a business and you're really evaluating it, core by core, little by little, and you see, what needs to be changed and what needs to be made a little bit better, it could have a humongous impact. So I thank you so much for, sharing all this with us today. And you've been a great guest, and I thank you so much for what you do.
Thanks, Stacey. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Oh, you're welcome. You have a great day.
You as well.